Welcome, everybody. Let me help you envision, explore, and execute your plans. This is Motivate Me, and I'm Lynette Renda. On today's show, literary sleuth Jennifer Warner is using her passion to make history. Before we get started today, I just want to make sure you know you can go to motivatemepodcast.com, and there you're going to find our show notes, links to all of the resources mentioned. You'll find an application to be on the show. You'll have access to our email, and we can direct you to the Motivate Me Ultimate Support System Facebook page, because nothing matters more to me than to connect with my listeners. So I hope I can do that starting right now. Welcome to the show, Jen. You know, usually I open the show having my guests recite some kind of quote or passage that is meaningful to them. Do you have something that you'd like to start the show with today?
I do, actually. I feel nervous trying to pick one quote, you know, being a sort of literary person, one quote to inspire or one quote that sort of sums up my experience. But there is one quote that I got tattooed on my arm, I think about 5 or 6 years ago. And it's a fragment of a sentence from the beginning of Mrs. Dalloway by Virginia Woolf. This is a book that takes place over the course of a single day and about this one character, Mrs. Dalloway. And in the beginning, Virginia Woolf writes, as this character is going out to enter this day that's going to be her whole life, she says, or interjects, "What a lark, what a plunge." And those were the lines that I got tattooed on my arm.
What a lark, what a plunge.
With exclamation points after each. So what a lark, exclamation point, and then what a plunge, exclamation point.
Can you explain that for us?
I like this quote so much, not only because it's an interjection, but also because the first part to me really means like to do things spontaneously and to really follow your gut. So to do things on a lark, meaning you're not thinking too much about it, which is sort of the antithesis to my personality. I am a very thoughtful person. And so I need the encouragement to do things on a lark, to sort of jump in and be uncomfortable. And what a plunge sort of follows so easily right after that is like to go full into something. And those were two connected ideas, I guess, that have always felt really lively to me and really important in terms of how I see the trajectory of my own life.
So just to live with a little bit more of abandon.
Yeah, it's not even about being afraid, I don't think, but more so of like, I've done enough in my life up until whatever point I'm at that like, whatever happens, I'll be okay. Intellectually or emotionally or whatever.
That makes a lot of sense.
I think it makes sense to me. Maybe I'm still figuring it out. Maybe it's part of my ongoing process that I'm always thinking about ways in which I can sort of plunge into every day or to do something that seems flighty.
Well, and I think that, you know, as life evolves, it may mean something to you now that it changes over time.
I hope so. I hope there is not too much stasis in my life, I suppose.
Well, you know, Motivate Me with Lynette Renda has a very big fat red exclamation point in it. That's my logo. So I am a fan of the exclamation point and living with a purpose and living with intention and going for it. That's definitely my motto.
Well, we're in agreement then there.
Definitely. Tell the audience what your passion is and kind of why you're on the show today. What are you all about?
Well, the latest project that I think inspired you to ask me to talk to you is this project called Writerly States, which I'm going to try and be simple and fast in explaining what it is. But basically, it's a video interview series with writers. And to get more specific, I've started with talking to writers in Brooklyn where I live. I've started talking with people who are sort of acquaintances so that I know them. I'm sort of vaguely in this writer literary community and have met these people at readings or conferences, and they've been very willing to, you know, open up and let me into their homes to interview them on video. And then I edit the videos and I figure out all the questions I'm going to ask them. And then the hope is that we can talk about process and craft and ideas about writing and or just to tell stories that are funny or inspiring or connected to writing in some ways. And the hope for me, or at least my thinking, was that I really saw this opening in the literary world where that wasn't happening, where I love reading interviews with writers, but oftentimes they're really long. I have to print them out. I don't have time necessarily, or there are so many that I want to read, I can't get to them all. And I thought that there wasn't really anyone doing that in terms of video in the literary community. And so I did kind of see this opening where I could create something new, that there was a void and I could do something that nobody had done, which isn't true. I mean, of course, people have done it. They just haven't done it as I would do it, which I think is true for anyone who wants to create something new. It's like the new thing doesn't exist. You just want to do it your way, which you think is different and better than the way that anyone else could do it.
And it may be different and better. It's definitely going to strike some people differently, and they may like it better than somebody else's version, just because it's you. I mean, even, you know, as a writer, you know, you could write about the same thing 100 other people did, but it's sure. going to have a different effect and it's going to have a different outcome.
Sure, totally. I think I also started to be interested in interviewing people because I felt isolated a bit, even living in Brooklyn, where there's, you know, this large faction of writers and it's a super literary place. I mean, hyper literary. And, but I still felt isolated. I thought, oh my God, what a burden to have to go to readings all the time, which I enjoy, but I can't do it all the time, especially not if I'm going to be a writer myself. I can't, like, balancing the social aspect with the actual practical aspect of trying to be a writer, I found really difficult and I found it really isolating. And so I also thought, like, if, you know, a writer would be willing to talk to me for an hour or 2 hours or however long, then I might actually be able to have sort of deep conversations, which are interesting to me. I don't really like small talk at parties, so I could go with my interests there, but then also like really build a community out of it too, not just for myself, but for other people. And I did find that to be true, even with some of just the initial interviews that I did, that, you know, a lot of writers have moved to Brooklyn because they do want to be part of a community and they don't want to feel alone just by being a writer. So
now you posted your first episode today.
I did.
And as soon as I saw it, I said, Jen, this is very cool. And I love the vibe. And
thanks.
I mean, who knows really what this could evolve into over time? I mean, it could go from a video series to a television series. It really could, or some other medium, because like you said, a lot of writers feel solitary and Brooklyn is a great place, you know, where a lot of writers collect, that where you would have a lot of people that you could meet up with. Now, did you say that the filming, because that episode was just over 8 minutes long, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. The first episode.
How long did it take for you to film?
Well, I probably filmed with Erica, I would say maybe 2 hours. But I have at least 3 or 4 other videos just of our conversation that will be coming out. And I managed to do that for each of the people that I've interviewed, to get from anywhere from like 4 to 10 sort of really short clips, either 8 minutes or 5 minutes or 10 minutes, but organized sort of around a certain topic. Instead of asking somebody to watch something that's a half hour long, I thought, you know, that would be a bit of a burden. But if I could break it up and make it smaller, I don't know. But there, I was able to get so much good conversation. I would say just 1 hour, 2 hours. I think the longest interview I did was maybe closer to 3 hours.
Okay, so you have a lot of fodder to work with here.
I have a lot of fodder. I have a lot of footage. I have a lot of videos that are going to be coming out. And that was really the plan, that I wanted to just do as much as I could and really not just create something that some people will find useful now, but to also start creating an archive and documenting what is happening in this really vibrant scene right now, so that in 30 years or in 15 years or in 100 years, there'll be this record of what it was like to be a writer in Brooklyn in 2015. And that is like really cool to me.
So you are setting up a legacy for yourself, really, with true intentions to just want to record and have a record of it all.
Yeah. I mean, I started being really, I think I've always been interested in archives, and I was doing some archival minded work when I was doing, I was working as the online editor for the Literary Review, which is, as you know, this literary magazine that has an online component. And I worked with the editor, Minna Proctor, to really get the online component started. And that was around 2012 when I moved to Brooklyn. I moved to Brooklyn in late 2011. So in early 2012, we sort of started this online thing and revamping that and thinking about what it could be. And Minna really gave me free rein to sort of start an archive and to start thinking about how, as a literary magazine, we could connect to other literary magazines and to other writers and other writing projects. So it's not too far removed from that. But yeah, I'm very much interested in archives and archival footage. And I recently saw MoMA showed some of the Zora Neale Hurston anthropological footage that she took in the South.
Okay.
During the WPA period, she traveled around with Alan Lomax while he was collecting his songs. And Alan Lomax was a really big inspiration for me, too, in trying to think about creating an archive. And also an aspect that I haven't explored yet, which I think is part of this project, is traveling and figuring out not just what it means to be a writer in Brooklyn in 2015, but maybe what it also means to be a writer anywhere in America.
Right. And that's the thing. And that there's a couple things that you're saying here that I really want to point out to my listeners. Number one is you get one idea that's true to you and you do it. First of all, I am surprised about what you're doing only because I know that you are typically a very reserved person who, you know, doesn't put themselves out there in this light typically to me. And I'm wondering if being behind the camera is something that you feel super comfortable with, because you're not, you know, you're not somebody who likes attention on you. You're more quiet, but not when it's coming to this. What are your thoughts on that?
I think I'm definitely more comfortable behind a camera than I am in front of a camera. I don't have that sort of like cult of personality.
Because what you're saying is to people who are listening is if they have an interest in anything, and it could be literary, it could be something else, but in archiving or documenting anything, that they don't have to have the kind of personality that's out in front of everybody, that's commanding attention, that it can be done in a really cool, quiet, guiding way that's interesting.
Well, I mean, think of all of the people who, I mean, I'm just thinking of the people who have been inspiring to me and as I've been beginning to learn how to interview people, you know, Charlie Rose, Terry Gross, and these are all people who to me seem like really fascinating people, but they're not big personalities. But they are people who can ask really smart questions and can work really hard and can connect with people. And like that is what's interesting to me, the connecting with people rather than trying to showcase some aspect of my personality. I mean, I think where I'm comfortable in terms of expressing my personality is in, I guess, a more introverted way, one-on-one with people.
I could totally see that in the video. We couldn't see you, but I could hear your voice and I could see the author's reaction to you and how she relaxed and changed a little bit throughout the interview. And I felt that totally had to do with you.
Well, it's really cool to hear. I mean, I'm just starting to get feedback now, which is really exciting because I have been working on this project with my head down sort of in a closet and nobody really knows about it. And so it's really encouraging and exciting for me to hear how people are reacting to it. And that for the most part, actually for the total part, for the, you know, less than 12 hours that the video has been up, that people have been reacting and responding really, really positively. So I'm really happy about that.
Right. Now, you got the idea, and between getting the idea and then acting on it, What was going through your head? Did you have any doubts or hesitations, or what were your thoughts?
Yeah, so I bought a video camera knowing that I wanted to do a project last summer. And it wasn't until April that I actually did my first interview.
What was your hesitation?
So there were so many hesitations. I mean, like, people are probably busy. I don't know if it's the right time. Also, like, I wasn't exactly sure what my project was going to be, probably until about January. I think I spent most of the summer and the fall just sort of playing with the camera and taking footage and seeing if I was comfortable in front of the camera. And actually, a really good friend of mine, who was a co-editor with me at the Literary Review, Gloria Beth Amadeo, she did my first sort of test interview with me. I think, I don't know if it was November or February, sometime during the winter. And it was sort of me and her both on camera, talking to each other. And I love Gloria Beth. And I thought we both, like, I think we were both very smart and funny and thoughtful people. But I hated the video. The video made me, I was like, I can't do anything with this. And it doesn't move me. And it's not inspiring. It just makes me feel awkward. And, you know, the ways that I'm not like a person who looks in the mirror very often, like literally, like I don't like check my hair in the mirror. I just like brush my hair and assume everything will be okay. but is that thing, you know, the first time you hear your voice played back to you, it's strange and it's weird. But this was a case where I thought, I'm never going to be comfortable with this. Why would I force myself to do something I'm not comfortable with? Like, let's figure it out. Let's do something else. And then it mostly was through, I watched a lot of videos. I watched a lot of YouTube videos. I watched just a lot of documentaries. I watched a lot of Charlie Rose. And I thought the most interesting thing is like when you see one person and you have one thing to concentrate on and they're looking, if not into the actual camera, into the lens, very near to it, and it becomes personal and it becomes moving. And that, like, when that clicked for me, I don't know when that was, but when that clicked for me, then I kind of knew where I wanted to take my project. And then I sort of felt very rushed. I thought, I need to interview like everybody every second of every day, because like, I got it. I think I figured it out.
I really feel like you're talking about my experience. And, you know, we all know I'm not an introvert. I'm a very outgoing person. I don't mind attention or being in front of people. But the first interview I did, I walked out of the studio, which is my study, and I just looked at my husband and said, it was flat. It was completely flat. And I just went upstairs and laid in my bed for hours. And I thought the same exact thoughts. I can't do this. I don't think this is right for me. What was I thinking? I made a mistake. All of my doubts started flooding in, but I had already scheduled a couple other interviews. And so I just moved forward with those. And the next interview I did, I walked out and I looked at my husband and I said, amazing. And he was like, really? And I was like smiling. And an hour later, I did another interview and I came out. And I was like, I thought the first one couldn't get better. And it did. And like you just said, you just keep moving and rolling forward. But once you got to that point and you started moving, did you make any mistakes or did you have any disappointments along the way?
Yeah. I mean, each part of like whatever the finished product is that is not finished, but that is sort of out in the world right now, went through so many iterations. I mean, just from like the logo to editing, to the actual editing, to really trying to pare down videos and to make them energetic and to make them fun. And the whole process, I definitely stumbled at every single part. Even if in my head it seemed really clear as to what I wanted to accomplish, I definitely stumbled at every point trying to get there. Even though, you know, as I said earlier, I always want to have confidence in jumping that I'll be okay, or, you know, in going forth. And mm-hmm. I think I saw myself through to that, to this point where that, like, I knew I would figure it out, even if I wasn't saying very nice things to myself in my head. I think I kind of knew that, like, if I just kept getting it wrong, I would eventually get it kind of right.
Yeah, I just don't think that we realize what a slow process creating things is. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't really matter probably what you're creating. The majority of things take a lot longer than you think they're going to take. And I think that's why the majority of people don't achieve and don't complete things, because they just don't have the persistence and the perseverance, you know, to just keep putting that one foot in front of the other.
I think it's harder. I think also, and this is one of my downfalls, is like, it's hard too when you try to do too much. Like when you actually are a very ambitious person, that can be a downfall as well. That can be a stumbling block, which is like, I was not only trying to do this interview project, I was working on a novel. I was, you know, trying to actually have friendships, mm-hmm. And a social life and work a full-time job. And it wasn't until I really decided that I wanted to prioritize this project and that I was willing to do that, you know, and be okay with giving up time for some other things.
Right. And you're making a very valuable point to listeners that if you're serious about accomplishing something that does take a lot of time. And here's the thing, Jen, I tell my listeners, listen, this is all about discovering or rediscovering a passion and fitting it into your life in whatever way that means for you. For some people, it's going to be low key, but for other people, I mean, it could be a giant leap. Or like you're saying, just if you have a goal that you want to accomplish, you need to make priorities, and mm-hmm. some things have to fall on the wayside so that you can accomplish your goal.
It's hard. I mean, it's hard to, like, it is hard to make those decisions, I think. And I'm a quite indecisive person. So, you know, be like, what do I want to work on tonight? Do I want to edit all of this footage? Do I want to read, which will help me work on my novel? Do I want to work on my novel? And at some point I was like, look, I'm working 40 plus hours a week. And then I have what, like, how many other projects that I'm trying to do? So I just started getting up a little bit earlier and going to sleep a little bit later and trying to figure out what combination of things was going to work for me. And I'm not, I have not perfected it at all. I have not perfected the habits that will make me a successful person.
I'm not there yet. I'm not there yet either. You know, people have great morning routines. My morning routine is stumble down to the studio as quickly as I can to get started, sometimes still in my pajamas, you know?
Yeah.
So I know some people have their whole morning meditation, do breakfast the right way, do, you know, exercise. And I'm not there yet either.
Yeah. I'm okay with, like, kind of being there 60% of the time. Like, 60% is good enough for me. And I realized that, you know, I had to let go of some of my perfectionist tendencies in order to get there. Like that it's okay to be there 60% of the time in some things so that you can be more present in other things too.
I think that's another valuable point that you're mentioning, is that you know, you can't give everything 110%. And if for a lot of people, they're being perfectionists and they're not moving forward and just getting started. Because I found the reality with that is that get started, because no matter how perfect you think it is, a short time down the road, you'll want to make changes to it anyway.
Mm-hmm. I had this moment, I think around January, where I was working really hard on a story that I wanted to submit to a contest. And at the same time, my roommate was trying to write a cover letter to a job that she really wanted. Like she thought she would be perfect for it. So we were kind of doing the same thing at the same time. And she was like, I really just want to watch, I don't know, some show. She just really wanted to watch some show. She's like, I just think that will make me happier than writing this thing. And I was like, I said to her, and I don't know where it came from necessarily. I was like, why don't you just like just tell yourself you're going to do it for 5 minutes or 10 minutes. And then, like, don't worry about it. If you do it for 10 minutes, great. If you don't, if you make it to 7 minutes, fine. And so I went in my room and I sort of said the same thing to myself, that I was going to work on the story for an hour. And sort of 3 hours later, I came out of my room and she was like, I wrote my cover letter. Do you want to read it? Like, so she just needed to tell herself that she needed 10 minutes to work on this. And she ended up working for a few hours and finishing the thing that she really wanted to do, but she was going to put off because the more fun thing to do or the easier thing to do was going to be to, like, enjoy herself.
It's the mind games we play with ourselves to get our work done.
Yeah. But it's funny. But the thing is, like, okay, so my story didn't get accepted or didn't win this competition, but my roommate got the job. And so I feel like a little bit validated that I had the right idea.
And your story will always be your story.
True.
It's not.
And I finished it, and I managed to, like, and that was I set out to do something and I did it, which was to finish this story in a month and to send it into this contest. And so I think that's also important too, is like setting
goals,
smaller goals, even if they're completely but sort of unrelated to what you imagine is the finished product or the end goal. Like, I don't know, if the goal is to write a novel, like, to set a small goal of like, today I'm going to write like a poem, like, or today I'm going to write in my journal, or today I'm going to write a story, even if it's not directly connected to the thing that you're hoping to do. Like, I think having those little victories can be really helpful, like, for your general feeling about yourself.
Yeah. Like, well, and I find that if I was to stop to do that, something about that would surface in what it was I needed to accomplish in the end anyway. So it will benefit me, you know, whether it could even just be terminology that I used or a new understanding that I've gained, you know, I find that it does surface. Mm-hmm. So let's get back to your videos. Now, you collected all this data, you have all this footage.
Sure.
And we talked about, like, hesitations, and we talked about, you know, mistakes or disappointments along the way. But at what point did you have a nice yes moment that maybe gave you a little bit more confidence?
That's a really good question. Because it's something I think I still wrestle with, is like being okay. Like, you know what I mean? Being proud of myself, or being okay, or telling myself that something I've done is good or good enough or great, or
That's interesting.
So I don't, like, for me, I don't think there was any one moment. I think it was this, like, gradual, it was very gradual in terms of, actually, you know what was really, this is a sort of anecdote, which I don't know if it completely answers your question, but I think it might be connected. I kind of found confidence in someone else's, what I perceived as someone else's failure, which does not make me feel great about myself.
But it's very honest.
But I think it's true. But so, I had done these interviews, as I said, in April and in early May. And at the end of May, the Paris Review, which is this really well-respected, well-funded, really great literary magazine, announced that they were starting a video interview series. And I was like, that was like the worst thing that could have happened. I was like, no, like, I waited too long. I thought about it too much. Like, my whole project is ruined. Like, now I'm going to be a knockoff of this thing and I'm not even close to being done. And they came out with these videos and the production quality was like so much better than mine. And they were really nicely shot and they had these famous writers. And I really enjoyed watching them. Aside from whatever sort of minor jealousies I had creatively. And then they kind of stopped. So there were maybe like 5 really great videos. And then by mid-June, they stopped.
Hmm.
And so there were maybe like 2 weeks where I was like, there hasn't been a new video. And that for me was like the kick in the ass that I needed to be like, oh, I have like 30 videos that I can put out. Like, and I can be consistent. And if I start putting them out, then I know that I'll be motivated to do more interviews with more people.
Right.
And so that was like, it sounds bad, I guess, in some ways to say that like someone else's inconsistency or what I had perceived as their failure was really the motivating thing for me to like, to make the thing real and not just linger with it.
Well, and that's goes back to perseverance and persistence and stick-to-itiveness, you know, that a lot of people don't have that. And that's what's separating people from completing projects, whether it's a novel or a video series or a podcast series, no matter what it is, it's sticking with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you stick with the things. Like, I don't know if we always have an explanation for why we stick with things or why we let things go. And some of it probably comes down to timing and what is like the reality of your life, of whether you're too worried about money to work on something creative, or if, you know, whatever, you have to look for a job instead of writing your novel. Like, there are realities that definitely get in the way. But I do also think that we let time get in the way. We let a lot of things get in the way.
I definitely think that too, but I also think that if you look at people, and like I read and study a lot of Dr. Wayne Dyer, and you know, he talks about how thoughts are everything. And he says, you know, when you're looking at taking a risk and moving forward with something of any kind of project or any kind of change, transformation, whenever you look at that, you know, we worry about it. And he says, if you are somebody who has always paid their bills, you are always going to find a way to pay your bills. Mm-hmm. If you're somebody who paying your bills doesn't matter to you that much, then no matter how much money you have, you may be the kind of person who's just not always paying their bills.
Sure.
You know? So I thought that was interesting. Can you tell us though, what did you learn about yourself during this process?
I think I actually learned that I'm more extroverted than I thought.
Ooh.
Which may be just like a sort of that I'm changing with age, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. An experience?
Yeah. But I, as much as I have really felt solace in being alone and being alone with my thoughts, like that's never been something that frightens me. I mean, I've been annoyed at the ability with which I'm burdened with that I can sit with myself and my thoughts. It seems like a burden sometimes, but I really also perhaps equally enjoy just talking with other people and being open with other people and seeing how sort of openness begets openness. And that's like a really cool thing. In a way that I think I've grown, or that something that I've learned about myself is that I'm able to find really a lot of joy outside of myself and in other people and in a world of communication.
Well, I think that is a very powerful statement coming from you, because I know you and I just know, like you said, you're comfortable being alone and never kind of seek that kind of attention or mm-hmm. I definitely hear your passion when you talk about connecting with the other writers about their stories and having this deep conversation and deep one-on-one connection. And it really translated into the one video that I've seen so far. I can definitely see your emotional investment in it and your energy without seeing you on the screen even.
That's really cool.
Did you get any good advice from anybody along the way that helped you?
I think the best advice that I've ever gotten was from my friend, Marin. She works in LA. She's a coach and a therapist for people who are overcoming addiction. And she herself overcame addiction. And I find her presence in my life to be really wonderful, even though she's across the country. But she told me when we were living together in Philadelphia while I was getting my MFA in creative writing, she said, you know, if we talk to other people the way that we talk to ourselves, like, none of us would have any friends. We need to be nicer to ourselves.
Yes.
And that's something that's really always stuck with me. And that is it, that is truly something that I will say to myself, like, just like, be nice.
Right.
But I think that's so true. I think we all believe that we're good people. And so many of us would never talk to other people the way that we talk to ourselves. And if you can remind yourself of that, then like you are equally as deserving of politeness and kindness as other people.
And I think that it may be brief. It may be brief, mm-hmm. these conversations, but I think they're frequent.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so that it really adds up. Now, do you have a book that you could recommend to listeners who, you know, something that's been motivational or inspirational or meaningful in any way to you in this process?
For me, it's mostly about any book that just tells a good story. And I don't mean that in like, because all books are stories, but where you have a clear sense that there's somebody who's telling you a story. So a book like Jesus's Son by Dennis Johnson, which is a very dark book about, it's a super lyrical short novel, short and fragmented novel, where the ultimate arc, which is very subtle, is about someone overcoming addiction. This character who is called Fuckhead, that's the name of his character. I don't know if you are into profanity on your podcast, but
when Jen Werner is here.
I've toned it down, as I hope you'll notice. No, but that's a novel to me that I really connected with, because I thought I can feel someone, the author, a spirit, a soul, another soul sort of reaching out through the text, trying to connect, trying to tell me a story. And I felt that way with a book like Winesburg, Ohio, by Sherwood Anderson, which is an old book, but you have a sense that there's someone trying to tell you a story about the weirdness and the grotesqueness of life in turn of the century middle America, which may seem strange, but I find it incredibly moving just to learn like what it could possibly, to imagine what it could possibly be like to live in that world and to feel like someone sort of telling you the story from the front porch rocking chair kind of a thing. And the other book that I've really felt that way about was Agua Viva by Clarice Lispector, who is a brilliant Brazilian writer who's just now or just recently being translated into English. But Agua Viva is this book that's incredibly mystical and lyrical and unconventional and artistic and sort of wild. It's like the wildest book that I can think of. And I think that that's really inspiring to me, to see wildness and to see adventure just within language and just within ideas that are really unconnected to the reality of what my life is at the moment.
Right. And it sounds like you're taking all these different pieces of literature. And I know you've only mentioned a few of some of your favorites. And I know you're an avid reader, obviously, but it sounds like you're taking everything that you've read and learned from your reading and your writing and applying that to the interviews.
Yeah, I read to learn, whether it's about how to write a story, how to write a book, or whether it's how to be a certain kind of person or how to approach a certain situation. Like, I don't really read to be entertained. Like, I find entertainment from TV and from movies. But books for me, it's like that's where the learning happens, whether it's literally about a subject. The Beak of the Finch is a really wonderful book. If you're interested in science, like, you know what I mean? Like, that's a book where I read it and I was like, oh my God, I know everything there is to know now about evolution and Darwin and the finches. So that's why I read. I read, I guess, to be smarter, not just to show off for other people, but to be smarter for myself on my own trajectory, I guess.
Right. And you're analyzing the reading as you're doing it, and you're analyzing the author in the process, which really is similar to what you're doing in your interviews, no?
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I'm not sure if I would have made that leap because I'm in it. I'm too far inside of it. But right. If that's how it appears, then I would believe it.
Yeah, well, I definitely see a fascination with the story, which comes from the author. And then I see you interviewing people about topics similar to or different than.
Yeah, I don't know. The funny thing is, like, I ask all of the people that I'm interviewing, I ask them all the same questions. So, like, and that might not be clear from just the one. Obviously, there's only been one video that is out in the public, and it may become clearer as more of the videos come out. But I tried really hard to find and make up and also steal questions that were sort of general enough that each of the writers that I was interviewing could answer them in ways that were specific to them.
Which is exactly what I'm doing. You know, I mean, I could ask different people the same question, but the interview is totally different.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what about another resource other than a book that might be beneficial to somebody who's kind of thinking along the same lines as you?
I really love YouTube. And like, because I've learned a lot, like, I love listening to super old songs. Like, a lot of the Alan Lomax archive is on YouTube, and it's not really available in other places as easily. But, like, the amount of archival stuff and the amount of information on YouTube is really wonderful. I mean, I could spend an entire half a day just watching videos from the 1970s of Dolly Parton and Emmylou Harris and Waylon Jennings and all of these, Johnny Cash, like all the Pete Seeger. There's all these wonderful old music shows that used to be on TV that are now on the internet, and they live on YouTube, and I'm really happy to watch those.
Now, and I know in our pre-interview chat, you mentioned one video that you were really drawn to that you feel impacted your journey with your video series.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. It's funny. I think I had just finished reading Benjamin Moser's biography of Clarice Lispector, who I mentioned earlier in talking about books, this Brazilian writer. And as soon as I finished that biography, I thought, like, there's got to be something on YouTube about her. And that's kind of like my go-to. It's like, if I learn about something, then it's like, I want to go to YouTube and see if there's a clip of this writer in Brazil from the 70s. You know, thinking it's sort of a long shot because, I don't know, there really isn't, there's a lot of stuff on YouTube, but there's not a lot of literary stuff. And I found this interview, and it was in Portuguese, and it hadn't been subtitled, and I don't speak Portuguese. But I watched it anyway, and so basically watching it entirely visually, and it's weird. I mean, it's like from 1977, and she's like it's at a television studio, and the set is really spare, and she's just sitting in this chair, and she's chain smoking, and occasionally the interviewer, who you don't see, who's sort of very near the camera, you know, the camera just. You hear the interviewer, and it just kind of zooms in on her wrist or on her cigarette or on her face or on her shoes. And it just seemed totally bizarre to me, and I was really enthralled. And then, I don't know why, but, you know, I checked back or I saw a link or something came up where it was like this interview came up again. And finally, somebody at Penguin had subtitled it. And when I finally was able to watch it in with English subtitles, it had exactly the same effect. It sort of didn't get any, it got better, I guess, but I became even more obsessed with it. And so I downloaded it to my phone and I watched it whenever I could. And I listened to it. I was, you know, watching it on the train going to and from work. I was just kind of putting it on to have it on in the background in the way that you would sort of play music or have something on to distract you. And that was, I don't know, I guess if I would have to pinpoint my inspiration to one thing, I found that to be majorly cool. Like, right. You know, something I could really get excited about, not just like, oh, like I know that this is like a good thing. It got me really excited. I thought, okay, someone made this in 1977 and maybe that was the style, and like, what's the style now? And so it opened me up to thinking about things that I probably wouldn't have thought of before.
Wow. That's really, and I know you watched that. You said earlier, you watched that multiple times for a couple of years.
I don't know how many views it has on YouTube now, but I'm sure I've contributed like close to 100.
Wow. Wow.
I mean, maybe not, but maybe I'm being hyperbolic. I don't know how other people feel about obsession, but I think obsession is kind of great.
Well, it seems like that obsession influenced what you just put out, which is a totally new direction for you. And the opportunities here really seem ceilingless for you with this endeavor, you know? Okay, so here's the deal. This part of the show, we're going to pick up the pace a little bit. We have three quick questions. It's like a 1 minute response each.
Okay.
And it's the most important part of the show because this is where we talk to listeners about the three steps to motivation, which I consider three simple steps. One, first, envision it for yourself. The second one is to explore the idea. And then the third one is to take action, execute. So if you were to tell somebody how they can envision what you've done for themselves, what would you recommend?
I guess the envisioning would be to find people who you want to be your mentors or who you want to inspire you, whether they're alive or dead or in a completely different field, like just to find and hang on tightly to people who you think are inspiring or who are doing something that you'd like to be doing, and just keeping them and their lives and their accomplishments in your mind. Because then I think maybe you'll allow yourself a little sort of competition, and competition is like a great motivator, I think. However dangerous it can be, right? If you're always comparing yourself to people or trying to compete, it can ultimately be dangerous. But I do think it can also be really positive. I think it can motivate people to accomplish things for sure.
Yeah, I think that is a great vision. And remember you saying earlier in the episode that you would watch people doing interviews.
Oh, definitely. I still do. I love it. Right. I'm obsessed with it. Totally.
Okay, so to explore then.
If I was watching a YouTube video of just say like a vlogger of someone who travels and gives a first person account of what his or her life is like, I figured out what was like the cheapest, best camera that I could get. I did the research to see like, okay, well then what do I need? And then just assembling the moving parts of getting a tripod and like getting an extra battery and getting an SD card for the camera. Like that was a very long process too of just figuring out like, what do I actually need? And I still don't think I have all the things that I maybe want, but I have enough and I have what I need in order to do the thing, even if it's not the top of the line or the best thing.
Okay. So you watch these interviews, you see what interviewing is all about, you get the proper materials, and now it is time to execute a plan. It is time to act. What do you do?
You scare yourself. you have to take risk, I think. I think you have to you have to be excited to take risk, even if you're scared. Like, I don't know how to say, like, you know, move beyond your fear.
Get out of your comfort zone.
Scare yourself, but it's going to be fun. Scare yourself. I just think most people aren't going to, I don't mean scare yourself like start taking crystal meth. Scare yourself. I mean like, do you know what I mean? Like that stupid thing that you know it's stupid. You know it's stupid to be scared of it. You know you're afraid of failing. You know you're afraid of success. Like what, like however many times you've gone over that in your head, like just tell yourself it's fun to be scared. And I'm not that kind of person. To be literal, I won't watch a scary movie. I hate to be scared.
Me too.
But if we're talking about I'm just scared because I don't know what's going to happen, like that kind of scared, or like I'm scared that nobody's going to want to talk to me, or I'm scared that nobody's going to like it, or I'm scared that I'm not going to make money or make enough or do, or, you know, or I'm not going to make somebody else happy. I don't know. I think scare yourself and then just tell yourself you're having a great time.
I like it. Okay, so if life is a process, because I believe that we can map our brains and envision and we will work towards what we want to accomplish. So if life is a process, where do you see yourself 5 years from now?
Where I would like to see myself? I'm really digging this whole interview thing. So I think it would be really, I would be really happy if I was still doing that in some way, whether it was still doing video, maybe potentially with a higher quality. Maybe I would really like to be traveling with it. I would really like to be traveling more and interviewing people in different places. And I would hope also that that would, I guess, allow me to have more time to write and to work on my own writing projects. So I guess in 5 years, if I have to be tough with myself, I would say this project, Writerly States, is a success. NPR is knocking down my door. They want me to replace Terry Gross. But then also, like, I would be celebrating some the release of some book that I had written. That would be, like, a perfect world for me, would be that I could actually make a job out of doing this somehow.
I love it.
And then also just writing my ass off. That's the goal.
What closing advice can you give to listeners?
I guess I would say work really hard. Don't try to be perfect and be nice to people.
Very nice. So, Jen, how can we watch your videos? How can we get in touch with you? Now, you're going to be a part of Motivate Me Ultimate Support System, our Facebook group. But cool. How else can people get in touch with you?
They can write to me at writerlystates@gmail.com. I have a YouTube channel, which is called Writerly States. Writerly States on Twitter, at Writerly States. I have a Tumblr and Instagram and everything. The handle for everything is Writerly States.
And when you say Writerly States, W-R-I-T-E-R-L-Y States, S-T-A-T-E-S.
That's right.
And this is Jennifer Warner.
It is.
Jen, thank you so much for coming on the show today. It was awesome to hear all about how you got into doing this and the steps you took. And you're always very candid with your thoughts and feelings. I know that my listeners could learn a lot from your journey here. And the fact that you are just embarking on it, I think is great because, you know, you'll be in the Facebook page and they'll be able to watch your videos emerge and watch your journey progress.
Well, I am very thankful that you invited me to talk to you and to know that there will ultimately be people listening to what I have to say. But I do want to say also that even though I was sort of embarking on this project alone, I knew at the end of it that I would have some friends who would be really receptive. Even if like the rest of the world didn't get it or didn't get it right away, I knew that I had friends like you, Lynette, who would be really appreciative and inspired and kind of into it. And so that was something that also kept me motivated. Like I knew I had friends who would think it was cool.
And I've already shared it, calling out to all my English teacher and writer friends to check it out. And it's already been shared from my page, which That's I think awesome. Is a great first step.
Well, I'm excited and thankful. And I hope that anything I said is helpful or insightful or motivating, exciting, fun, cool, new. It's all good.
Okay, everybody, here's your go-do. At one point, Jen had a real fear about missing out on an opportunity to create something she believed in, that someone else had beat her to it. Is there something you keep saying you're going to do but haven't yet? Something you have on the back burner? Let's talk about it in the Motivate Me Ultimate Support System Facebook group and see if we can't figure out and get you going. Remember, you motivate me. I'm Lynette Renda.